This podcast contains uncensored profanity and topics not intended for all audiences. This episode in particular is about super volcanoes, and we mentioned topics like apocalyptic natural disasters and human fatalities. So if you don't want to hear about that kind of thing, this is your opportunity to turn it off and enjoy the rest of your day undisturbed. But if you do want to learn about the nightmare slushies churning underneath the world's angriest mountains and what makes them go boom, then welcome right this way into the smoldering caldera that is Spellbound and Gagged with special guest geochemist and science communicator Megan Ankney. I'm so excited to talk to you, first of all, because I have been devouring your TikToks, like just an IV drip directly into my veins of your TikToks.
Yay!
Because they're fascinating. They're very enlightening. In fact, you did a bunch of really cool TikToks about Pompeii, which I feel like I'm like starstruck. I'm like, it's you from my phone.
I know. It's always a weird thing to talk to people where it's like, I sort of know who you are, but now I get to interact with you live.
I feel like I've already like microdosed FaceTiming with you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I do.
Well, so, you know, since we have already done our Pompeii episode, I really wanted to talk to you today about another volcano that I think has dominated a lot of sort of volcano-related discussion. But before we dive into that, let's talk about why we're talking about volcanoes today. For people who are listening who aren't very familiar with you and your work, how did you get into your work researching and working with volcanoes? Because people like me don't know that volcanology
yeah.
Did not realize that was an option as like a thing you could like do.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's fine. I didn't realize like geology was an option until like right before I was getting ready to apply for colleges. I was like, oh, that's a thing. And I used to collect a lot of rocks.
That still feels like something you would like come across as like a field when you're maybe in like taking high school science, right? You might like be broadly aware that geology is like a concept.
Yeah.
But a lot of people may not realize that like volcanology is
you
know, its own thing. So I would love it if you could explain a little bit what that path is like.
Yeah. So I started out as a geology major in college, and I have been doing research in some way or another since I was an undergrad. I think I started, during my junior year, it was sort of like the first big involvement that I had, and worked with a professor who did projects on volcanoes in Antarctica. So I got to go and like do a field season there.
Amazing. What was that like? How was Antarctica?
It's like one of the most beautiful places that I've ever been. It's just like really stark, but like these huge mountains rising up out of the ice. And yeah, it's just, it's really beautiful in like sort of a bizarre way.
Yeah, because I can't think of anything that you could really compare it to that like the typical person would be familiar with, like, right? Like that type of very like barren landscape is very different.
Yeah. I mean, like the closest thing is probably like the footage that people see of the ice covered parts of Iceland that have volcanoes, you know, sort of coming out of the ice. But anyway, so yeah, I've been doing research on volcanoes since I was an undergrad, which was like 15 years ago, which is terrifying. Yeah, and I just got involved because I went to a small school that had a really strong push to incorporate undergrads in research projects, and I really loved this professor's classes and did well in them. And so yeah, that's just kind of how I got interested in that. And like, who doesn't like volcanoes and realizing like, oh, I can make like a whole career out of this.
Yeah. Were you a volcano kid?
No, I was like more of a dinosaur kid.
Okay. That's similar energies, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely started out like a dinosaur fossil kid.
So you liked stuff in the ground at least.
Yes. Yeah. Like I had a big rock collection, all of that. That said, I for sure was one of those kids that like went down rabbit holes of like getting super interested in big disasters and stuff that happened.
Oh, yeah.
So like Yellowstone and Mount St. Helens and Pompeii and all that were like big things that I remember like reading a lot about and being very interested in. So yeah, so it was a thing for a long time.
Did you have those eyewitness books?
I remember them. I can't remember if I owned any, but like I for sure checked them out of the library.
I definitely had one that was a Pompeii book that I read so often that like it fell apart at the seams. Mm-hmm. Like the binding fell apart and cracked in half.
Oh. Probably since those were written, like a lot of things have changed about what they've excavated in that area. But yeah, and then I decided, because I had done undergrad research, that I was really interested in going to grad school. So I, yeah, mainly applied to work with people who studied volcanoes in various sub-portions of that field, like some on mm-hmm. the more physical side. And ultimately, I ended up on like the geochemistry side.
What does that mean?
My advisor sort of put it to me like, obviously, there's a lot of work that happens and sort of like active monitoring and stuff of volcanoes. And you can go into like more of a geophysics field to do that. There's like physical volcanology, which is like more like macro scale, I guess, view of like how deposits are structured and everything from eruptions. And then he was like, well, if you want to like sort of be on the cutting edge of things, like the chemistry of volcanoes is like where you want to go. And I was like, well, that sounds great. So
he sounds like he's trying to like dunk on the geophysics nerds.
Well, yeah, but like he's obviously like really good at selling it.
He's the figure in the dark alley in a trench coat. He's like, hey, kid,
yeah,
do you want to learn about geochemistry? All the cool kids are doing it.
Admittedly, I remember not really loving college chemistry, so I didn't think that I wanted to do geochemistry, but it was like putting it in the context of like rocks and volcanoes and like these more physical processes like made a lot more sense to me. So yeah, so I can say like I'm a volcanologist, but like probably more specifically I'm an igneous petrologist or an isotope geochemist. And my PhD focused on Crater Lake in Oregon, which had a very large volcanic eruption about 7,700 years ago, which I'm sure I could do an entire podcast episode on that alone. But what I was doing was using the chemistry of rocks that had been erupted during the buildup to that large caldera forming eruption to try to tell us about processes that were happening in the magma chamber as we're like accumulating all this magma and working towards this large eruption. So with the idea that like you're kind of like the forensic pathologist, like coming in to look at the body after the fact.
Doing a little post-mortem.
Yeah, like we're looking at things that have already erupted, but with the idea of learning, like, here's what happens inside the volcano as we're working towards this big eruption, and it can, like, tell us about what goes on.
So for, like, volcano normies like me, who are, like, on the casual spectator end of volcano knowledge, when you say caldera, explain to me what a caldera is.
Yeah, because we will use that word a lot tonight.
Yes.
Yeah, so most people think of a volcano and they're either thinking like something like Hawaiian type where it's a bunch of lava flows and sort of a big broad shield-shaped mountain, or they're thinking of sort of like the classic like Cascade volcano where it's like roughly a triangle.
Yeah, the science fair volcano.
Yeah, and there's like a little crater at the top, and yeah, you think of it as like
there's usually the like volcano, red lava actively spilling out of it at all times,
right?
And then just like a big mushroom cloud that's just like part of it, like
yeah I guess like the real life example would be like Mount Etna, because that's like constantly you know, sort of having these small eruptions.
If there's a volcano in a video game, the volcano is just like it's coded into the game as just like constantly,
yeah,
forever spewing lava with a big giant mushroom cloud over it. That's just like part of its model. It just never goes away.
Yeah, yeah, it's like the Mount Doom style of like volcano. I want to go Lord of the Rings. So yeah, most people think of that, like the Science Fair volcano, and it's got the crater at the top. And everyone thinks like, oh, well, that crater forms because the top of the mountain gets blown off. So you get this crater, like you would like a bomb going off, basically. Mm-hmm. So a caldera is also a big hole, but caldera comes from the Spanish word for cauldron, I believe. And when a caldera forms, it's when you have this big magma chamber in the upper crust, and you have such a large explosive eruption that you remove so much of the material from that magma chamber that, like, it can't support the weight of the mountain or the crust that's above it. So after you have, like, sort of that single vent that forms, you remove a bunch of magma, then the whole mountain opens up a ring of vents and starts to collapse inward. And you can kind of think of it like a piston dropping down. Mm. Or if you had, like, a boiling pot of water and you were to, like, shove something down into the middle of it, it would all spew out the sides of the pot.
I'm also thinking of the Great British Bake Off. Whenever they make, like, a cake where maybe the middle of it is a little underdone or something like that, and like the weight isn't evenly distributed on the cake, and then you see, like, when the middle of the cake isn't cooked enough, it's too soft, you see, like, all of the frosting slump.
Yeah, like a souffle just, like, collapsing.
Yes, like a collapsing souffle.
Yeah. So calderas, like, aren't the mountain being, like, blown off. It's actually the mountain collapsing in on itself.
Okay.
So you have, like, this big cauldron block that basically drops down into, like, the empty portion of the magma chamber. Mm-hmm. And I say empty, but, like, you know, more empty than it was before.
There's still stuff in there.
Yeah, but it works the very same way as, like, a pot boiling over. Once you start to drop that cauldron block, now you have, like, not just one vent, but you have a whole bunch of a ring of vents that are boiling over, and you get really big pyroclastic flows, and it's a whole big thing. But, like, in the case of Crater Lake, for example, you took what was a 12,000 foot tall mountain, or at least they like to say it was 12,000 feet, so that way it was, like, a little bit taller than Mount Shasta.
Is there beef among the mountain hike community?
I think so. Like, they want it to, like, they want that one to be, like, one of the tallest Cascade volcanoes before this happened.
But, okay.
Yeah.
Toxic masculinity among mountain measurers.
Yeah. Here's what you'll probably learn, like, as you talk to scientists for this show. Like, we all have, like, so much beef within our little communities, but...
Do you think that on the different mountains' dating profiles, they each have, like... You know how, like, on dating profiles, like, sometimes dudes will have, like, their height on their dating profile? They'll be, like, 6'4".
Yeah, like, they're all... We can't all be 6'1", right? Like, we can't all be 12,000 feet tall.
But, like, if you go back and forth between them, like, maybe each one is, like, always updating their profile to be, like, a few feet taller than the other one.
Yeah. And they can kind of get away with it because it's, like, they're extrapolating from, like, the current edges and sort of, like, making a cone again. So
they're like, you gotta measure from the edge of the cone. It's like when dudes are like, see, yeah, I gotta stand up straight, and then you gotta measure from right here.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, height beef aside, yeah, you took, like, a 12,000 foot tall mountain, and within probably, like, a few days to maybe a week, you collapsed away the top mile of it. So, like, just 5,000 feet of mountain was just gone and, like, had disappeared into a giant pit into the ground.
Not supposed to do that.
Yeah. And that's one of the small calderas.
I mean, I would have to, is that something that happens, like, all at once, a big, like, plop? Or is it something where it just kind of, like, sinks gradually over time?
So we haven't really seen it happen. So
I think we'd notice, right?
Yeah, like, we haven't, this isn't like a, yeah, it's within hours to days that, yeah.
Oh, that is fast.
Yeah, it's really fast. Like, I guess I shouldn't say that we've never seen this, because places like Krakatoa, Santorini, like, you just, like, obliterated islands and left behind a hole in the ocean.
Oh, and is that from what you were talking about? Like, the caldera, like, sinking in like that?
Yeah.
Wow. I guess I didn't realize that was, like, something that just happened, like, suddenly.
Yeah, yeah. It's like probably hours, like maybe, maybe up to multiple days. But yeah, like during that whole time of like that multiple day period, there's like extremely violent eruptions happening the whole time. So it would have been like a total nightmare.
You know, since we're talking about, you know, volcanoes that have these huge sort of impactful eruptions. Like we just talked about Pompeii, where like an entire city was wiped off the map and thousands of people died because of this volcanic eruption. But another, it's funny because it is a volcanic eruption that people talk about constantly and it hasn't happened, right? It's like a prospective, a future volcanic eruption that people are constantly talking about that causes a lot of anxiety and a lot of worry in a lot of people is the eruption of Yellowstone. So the only thing I know about this is that Yellowstone is described as a super volcano. And to be honest with you, I don't know what a super volcano means. I'm assuming that it means a big one.
Yeah, it essentially just means really big. So super volcano is, it's like another place that volcanologists like sort of have beef.
I love niche like science drama.
Because I don't think that like everybody loves that term just because,
but
I don't know.
It's sexy. It's attention grabbing.
I think people just think it's like a little bit dramatic and like it doesn't really mean anything like technically. Like there's no technical guidelines that specifically go with that term. So it gets thrown around a lot. And I don't know. They don't like that, but it's like, whatever. Like, it's fun to say. So I don't mind. I don't mind it.
Have some fun with it.
I have a PhD in volcanology. Like, I'm fine with super volcano. So my opinion counts for something.
it's a good PR strategy. It's a good marketing term. You know, you could slap super volcano on
right.
there.
It's like, just take your grant money from this fancy word and like, just shut up about it.
Take your money and go.
Yeah, the whole point here is that like super volcano isn't really like the true technical term. So more technically, a super volcanic eruption is one that measures a VEI 8. And VEI is the Volcanic Explosivity Index.
This is my favorite index I've ever heard of. This is amazing. This is up there with the pain index of insect stings.
Yeah.
Like, on the list of like most exciting scientific indices I've ever heard of.
Yeah. So it's like sort of analogous to the Richter scale that they might determine the magnitude for an earthquake. But it is a logarithmic scale that goes from 0 to 8 for volcanoes, where like 0 is like not explosive at all. We're talking like Hawaiian type eruptions where we're just blobbing out a whole bunch of lava to VEI 8, which are our super volcanoes. And to be a VEI 8, you have to erupt over 1,000 cubic kilometers of pyroclastic material.
Okay.
So pyroclastic meaning, another word you could use is like tephra, but like pyro is fire, clast is broken. So it's just like fragmented lava that's being explosively erupted. So we're talking about ash and pumice and things that are expanding rapidly as they get exploded out of the volcano.
It's a chunky lava soup.
Yeah.
The chunks in the lava soup.
Yeah. So over 1,000 cubic kilometers. And these are our biggest ones because we've never seen a VEI 9, which would need like 10,000 cubic kilometers of tephra that gets erupted.
Okay, so it's measured by like not necessarily the size of the volcano, but how much it could erupt.
Yeah, it's not so much the size of the mountain, it's like how much comes out of it.
I guess, you know, I've heard of, for example, something that I remember learning from doing my notes on Pompeii is that like Mount Vesuvius, for example, has erupted many times over the years with varying levels of intensity. So it's not just like this one volcano has huge eruptions, right? It's not like a trait that's like specific to that volcano, right? Because Mount Vesuvius would have like every 1,000 years or so, it might have this huge eruption that like destroys towns and stuff like that. But then more frequently than that, it'd be a little puff. It'd be like a little boom, and so I guess what I'm curious about is like what makes the difference between like whether one volcano erupts a lot or a little.
Well, that's kind of the big question. To be honest, that's like a whole PhD's worth of a question. And that was like sort of a big question about the work that I did was like, how do you take, for example, Crater Lake, which, sorry, you guys are like not going to get out of here without hearing some about Crater Lake, because like that's what I know the most about.
I want to hear about Crater Lake. Yeah,
for sure. Crater Lake is obviously like an order of magnitude. So compared to like the big Yellowstone eruptions or VEI-8, Crater Lake's would have been VEI-7, so an order of magnitude less on this volcanic explosivity index, but like still a very large eruption. But yeah, like that's sort of the big question, right? Is like, how do you take this like sort of otherwise standard cascade volcano that as it's growing doesn't really seem that much different than the other ones around it, whether it's Rainier, Shasta, whatever, and like turn it into this volcanic system that is able to accumulate a huge amount of evolved magma shallowly in the crust and support this big caldera forming eruption. So like, that's sort of the question there. And at Yellowstone, it's a totally different type of volcano. It's actually the same type of volcano as what's going on at Hawaii. There's a hot spot beneath the crust there, but instead of passing through really dense, thin ocean crust and sort of just like being able to come right out at the surface, you have this huge, thick piece of continental crust that is covering this mantle hot spot. So you're producing huge amounts of heat and huge volumes of magma that's rising up in the crust, and continental crust kind of works as like a density filter. So at some point, the buoyancy of the magma that you're creating equals out with the buoyancy of the crustal material around it. And you just start accumulating it in this huge upper crustal magma chamber until eventually you get so much or something destabilizes the system. You've got a whole bunch of gases and other volatiles in there that you create a big eruption. But it's like you have to have some set of conditions that let you gather up a very large volume of what we would call evolved magma in the upper crust.
Yeah, when your magma gets to level 32, then it evolves.
Yeah, no, not like Pokemon. All volcanic rocks, like on a very basic level, they come in a range, and that's like based on the amount of silica that they have in them. So if it's basaltic, which is low amounts of silica, then you're looking at eruptions that are more like what's going on in Hawaii. So basaltic magma is hotter, tends to be less viscous. The silica that's in there like doesn't form a bunch of chains that tangle everything up. And so it's easier for it to flow. We don't build up these huge like plugs and pressure and everything.
It sounds to me like when you're describing the volcanoes in the Pacific Ocean, you get like more frequent but less severe eruptions. So like they're just like letting off steam, basically, you know, you're like letting out steam more frequently so that you don't get a big, big, big buildup.
Yeah, there's basically nothing, like there's just thin ocean crust that's about the same composition as what's rising up from the mantle. So it's like there's not really anything blocking it from like getting to the surface and just sort of constantly oozing out and releasing that pressure. And, you know, that's oversimplifying because obviously you have like big fissures that open up like the one that just did at Mauna Loa, but and those can be dangerous as well. But like big explosive volcanoes, it's a different type of magma. You've got something that's letting large amounts of it accumulate in the crust. It's really viscous. It's got a lot of silica in it. So it's just really hard for it to get to the surface. So you get large volumes of it until like it can't stand it anymore. And it like it has to just come erupting out.
This is the volcano that never went to therapy.
Yeah, it's just holding it all in.
Just hold it all in, my guy.
Until ultimately something goes really wrong and it erupts.
Let this be a lesson.
Don't hold it in.
In conflict resolution, see? When you regularly release pressure and relieve tension, then you're not going to have that build up and you won't have that super volcano.
It's better for everyone around you. If you just let it out.
Let it out.
Don't let it build up inside you. Yeah, there's a reason we use a lot of these like volcanology terms for like that kind of emotional turmoil. Like people eventually erupt. It's like,
Be the volcano you want to see in the world.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm going way too deep into stuff because it's like I rarely get the chance to just like.
That's what I'm here for. I'm the repository.
I did want to swing back around to your point, though, where you were like, oh, it seems like, you know, you don't just get these big eruptions. You get a lot of smaller ones. Mm-hmm. And like Yellowstone is no different. Like it's volcanically active right now. Like you've got the hydrothermal system and all the geysers and all that. And
is that helping? Does that help?
I mean, it's a way. Like all that, the gases coming out of there, mm-hmm. like that's a lot of stuff that's coming from the magma chamber that's being released. So like those are releasing pressure from within the earth. So yeah, so like they're a good thing.
Can I ask what might to you sound like a very stupid question?
There's no such thing.
would it be of any, is it anything if we drilled holes into the volcano to like relieve to help it out, basically? Like, is that anything? Has that been suggested?
Yeah, so that's like a super common question. I've gotten that question so many times.
Oh, and it's
not a
stupid
question. It's not a stupid question because it's like, oh, you want to release pressure, like, so why don't we drill into it? So first of all, just like drill technology wouldn't really work in this case, mm-hmm. because like you're in a volcanically active area. You've got this magma chamber down below. Magma chambers aren't like they're not what you see in like the elementary school drawings where it's just like a pool of liquid.
Like, just the one big one.
Yeah, just like it's just like all magma, all molten rock.
Oh, that's how it was in did you watch The Rings of Power?
I need to finish it, and okay. I haven't yet.
Yeah, in I think it was in The Rings of Power. There's a whole scene where they're like inside a big volcano, and it was like you're talking about, like the whole volcano was just like, the volcano was like just a big shell around fire lake. Like
just like a Cadbury egg, but like magma inside of it.
Like a pizza roll that you just took out of the oven. And you're gonna bite into it anyway, even though you know it's gonna burn your mouth.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're talking about, you know, when I say shallow, like magma chamber, like I'm still talking about like at least 5 kilometers beneath the surface of the earth. So like a couple miles at a minimum beneath the surface of the earth. And all that rock is like really messed up from like all the hydrothermal fluids, and like they can turn acidic, and it's going to be sort of mushy down there. So it's like you would probably just gum up your drill like almost instantly and basically not make it anywhere near the magma chamber itself. And magma chambers aren't just like big volumes of molten rock. They are, and this is like actually the technical term, no matter how silly it sounds, but oh, they tend to be more crystal mush.
Aww. That's so, hold on guys, new drag name just dropped. It's me. I'll be performing at a bar near you. Crystal mush.
Yeah, so it's like 50% crystallized material to up to, you know, 90 something percent crystallized material with like just molten material around each of those crystals that's formed in it. So it's like, it's sort of just like a big magma slushy. It is a magma slushy because like ice is a solid form of mm-hmm. water. And
yeah,
and like the melted part is all everything that's around it. So like, it's more like a really thick slushy down.
Yeah, you get them when you go to the movies.
But like a nightmare slushy.
And it's also like not all in the same place.
Yeah. Like you can sort of have, like multiple chambers. And yeah, so we've got 3 points here. We've got one, that rock's going to be really mushy, like all through the crust, like leading down to this. So like your drill probably isn't going to make it down there. Two, like you can't like suck it out like a straw, like mm-hmm. or just like drain it. Three, and this is going to sound sort of counterintuitive, but you could actually make things worse by releasing that pressure.
Uh-oh.
Because in order to get one of these big eruptions, there's got to be like some sort of trigger event that happens. And like it could be like, oh, you've just built up so much pressure that like all of a sudden the rock above starts to fracture. And like that provides a runway for the magma to start rising upwards. As it rises upwards, then gases that are dissolved in it, because they're under pressure and deeper underground, start to exsolve. So they start to come out of solution and form bubbles. And then it turns into this like runaway reaction of like, now you have an eruption that's happening.
Oh, wow.
So you could basically trigger an eruption by like suddenly drilling in there and like releasing that pressure all of a sudden.
You could become the villain.
Yeah. So that'd be like a good supervillain move, like in a weird movie where it's like, I'm going to make Yellowstone erupt or some volcano, whatever.
That would be a great sort of like, you know, one of those villains who isn't necessarily interested in conquering the world, but more about destroying it.
Yeah, just like chaos.
Why is Yellowstone in particular the one that people focus so much on being like, if Yellowstone erupts, it's going to like destroy the world? You know, I feel like that's the narrative that I keep hearing about it, right? Is that like, if Yellowstone erupts, the world is over.
So this is where I get to like be a little less doom and gloom about stuff, because that was certainly like the narrative that honestly that I felt like I learned like all along, or was under that oppression. Like, that happens, like, A, it's instantly over for a lot of people who live close to it, but like that we were all gonna eat it because, you know, you're gonna go into a volcanic winter and like you can't grow food, all this stuff, blah blah blah, everything will be terrible and we're all gonna starve to death.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, as to like why Yellowstone in particular, I don't know that I can say for sure, because I mean, I think it's a national park. It's got some like pretty spectacular geysers and like evidence at the surface of volcanic activity that's like clearly still going on in the area. So like that might be part of it. It might be like, I don't know, Americans like really love to like sensationalize.
Oh, we do. Oh, yeah, we do. Love it.
Yeah, so
favorite.
That might be part of it, is like in a 24-hour news cycle, it's just a super easy thing to be like, hey, remember that giant volcano that's like in the middle of our country and could kill all of us?
That's true. It is kind of central, right? Like, it's like sort of, yeah, smack dab in the middle. So it does, it feels like egalitarian destruction. Like, everybody, yes, gets it.
Yeah, yeah. There's just like, in general with super volcanoes, there's just this sense of like existential dread about it. Like, it's unfathomably large and just like an unfathomable amount of power, mm-hmm, that's just natural, and it's just like there's nothing that we can do about it.
That's the problem. Like, for beyond, me, I like, think.
Right, like beyond like evacuating people or like, you know, dealing with the fallout after the fact. So it's like just that sense of like powerlessness about something that's like so big. And to me, I'm like, oh, that's really awesome. But like, yeah, I get it. Like, why? It's very scary. It is funny to me, though, that people focus so much on Yellowstone, because like, it's not the only super volcano in the U.S. There's Long Valley and the Valles Caldera. That Long Valley's in California. Valles Caldera is in New Mexico. So like, we've got other ones that have erupted. There are about 20 super volcanoes in the world, and like that's of like about 1,000 active volcanoes.
This isn't helping to alleviate any anxiety.
Okay, we're getting there, I promise.
You're like, this is not all doom and gloom, because there's actually 20 of these guys that
you're like,
go.
You are making it worse. No, I promise. Because the first part of the question was, why do people focus on Yellowstone? And my answer to that is like, I don't know. Here's all this other scary shit that's out there.
There's worse. I have great news. The problem is worse than you thought.
Yeah, it's going to get worse before it gets better. That's like how the next couple minutes are going to go.
Trust the process.
Trust the process.
I've put my life in your hands.
Okay. So, yeah. So there's about 20 supervolcanoes in the world, we think, right now. Supervolcanic eruptions happen about every 50,000 to 100,000 years. So depending on, like, the amount of time that you are looking at. So, like, Yellowstone isn't even the most recent of them. Like, its most recent what would be considered a supervolcanic eruption was 640,000 years ago. So again, like, I don't know. There are about 40 to 50 supervolcanic eruptions that have been identified in the geologic record so far, although there are probably more that have happened. They just, like, we don't see the evidence, or we don't have access to, like, the ash that was left behind by them anymore. We're going to make it a little worse again.
I've put so much faith in you.
I'm sorry. The biggest one, so when we measure supervolcanoes, when we measure volcanoes, we tend to talk about the size of them. So there's volcanic explosivity index. There is also dense rock equivalent. Dense rock equivalent is, okay, here's all of the ash and pumice and material that got erupted. And now we're basically going to, like, unpop the popcorn kernel and say, like, how much magma does that actually represent? Because you can get a little bit more of, like, an accurate idea of the size. So Yellowstone has had these three caldera-forming eruptions, one that happened 2.1 million years ago that erupted about 2,500 cubic kilometers of magma, which is, like, I mean, it's just huge numbers.
Yeah.
1.2 million years ago, that erupted about 280 cubic kilometers. And that one, I think, is, like, not technically considered a supervolcanic eruption.
My brain cannot render an image of, like, any that amount of cubic kilometers of anything.
Yeah, it's just bananas. And, like, so then the most recent one was about 1,000 cubic kilometers of magma. And with each of these, like, you go around Yellowstone the park, and it's hundreds of meters of ash that have been built up from, like, single eruptions. So it's just absurdly large amounts of material that get erupted. The largest Yellowstone eruption, though, is less than half the size of the largest one that's ever been identified, which is one that happened about 30 million years ago called the Wawa Springs, which occurred in Utah. And that erupted over 5,500 cubic kilometers of magma.
This is still the, I feel like the numbers,
it's still getting worse.
The numbers are so big that they have become meaningless to me. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, I understand that is a large number, but yeah, like, it's so beyond.
And it's, like, volume. So, like, it, yeah, it's hard to, like, visualize how much space or how, yeah, how much space that actually takes up. Yeah. So it's just, it's absurdly large amount. So, like, there have been bigger ones. Yellowstone is big. Like, there are 20 of these. We've had 40 to 50. They happen every 50 to 100,000 years.
So she has a track record. She's got a reputation.
Yeah. Like, the supervolcanic eruptions are, like, just a thing about living on this planet. Yellowstone has had three. Everybody likes to, like, freak out. And, you know, you see things where it's like, it's due for another one because it has one every 600,000 years and it's been 600,000 years. Like, that's not how volcanoes work. So, like, don't worry about that when anybody tells you that. There have been three, and yes, they have been about 600,000 years apart, and it's been 600,000 years since the last one. But, like, two 600,000 year periods, like, isn't enough to call this, like, a pattern that it has. So it is possible it will erupt again. I think the current, I don't know, news story blurb that they put out is, like, probably it's not going to do anything major in, like, the next few thousand years, at least. If it did, it'd be something small, because the Yellowstone's had a lot of smaller eruptions than the three big ones that everybody talks about. So, like, really, everyone freaks out about Yellowstone, but, like, it's not the only one. And there's, like, it's special. Like, yeah, I think it's a special place. It's a really cool place, but, like, it's not unique, I guess. It's not the only one. So now we're getting to the stuff that will make you feel a little bit better, I promise.
You know, you mentioned that, like, you know, these super volcanic eruptions are, like, part of the territory when it comes to, like, living on the planet Earth.
Yeah.
That wasn't in the Zillow listing. I just wanted to say that wasn't disclosed.
Yeah. Well, like, neither was, like, you know, getting hit by a giant asteroid or anything like that. So.
I'm going to need to see the fine print on this contract, because I didn't sign up for any of this. None of this was in my job description.
Yeah, it's fine. We just had a guest on our show, and she was talking all about, like, she's a astrophysicist and was talking all about, like, rogue black holes and rogue planets that just sort of, like, roam galaxies. And she's like, yeah, that's sort of what I worry about. And I was like, I don't want to hear about any of this.
I feel like whoever coded our universe was so lazy. Like, there are so many. Like, can we get a patch? Jeez. Like, the bug fixes on this busted ass universe.
Yeah, but volcanoes are cool.
That's true. We have been given a gift.
Yeah. Here's the thing that I tell people about volcanoes is like, yeah, they are kind of scary and like an existential dread, and like especially super volcanoes. You can't control it. You know, you think you're going to die. But like, we probably wouldn't have life on Earth as we know it without volcanoes.
Because
like long, you know, billions of years ago, volcanic activity is like probably what brought like most of the water that we have and like the gases that make up our atmosphere, like from Earth's interior to the surface. So
volcano giveth, volcano taketh away.
The volcano giveth, volcano taketh. There is no God. There's only volcanoes.
There's only volcanoes. Okay, make me feel better, please.
Okay,
I'm spiraling.
We're here. We're at the point where we're going to feel better. Maybe. In Florida, like, really, you shouldn't worry about it.
Yeah, we're good.
You guys have bigger problems to worry about.
Yeah, well, we just gators.
Okay, so obviously the big take home here is, like, really big eruptions. Like, it's not just that they're devastating to the area where they happen, like they can have global effects because you're sending a ton of ash and a ton of gas like up into the upper atmosphere and essentially like blocking out the sun's rays or causing them to be reflected back into space. So like you're going to cool down the planet and cause the volcanic version of like a nuclear winter. Like it's going to get a lot colder and that's not great for crop growth, all this stuff. It's like I said, I sort of got this narrative of like everybody's going to die if there's a super volcanic eruption, but humanity has survived two of these in the past, which is like another reason that it's funny that everybody focuses on Yellowstone, because there are two that are way more recent that like people have been around for. So the first was the eruption of Mount Toba in Indonesia, which happened about 74,000 years ago. Scientists propose that this lowered global temperatures by about 3 to 3.5 degrees Celsius for several years and possibly was large enough to trigger an ice age. So like this had huge effects.
And that's still within like Homo sapien time, right? Like,
yeah, we were around.
and not just in the existential, like our ancient ancestors, right? These were like actual, like as we know them now, human beings.
Yeah, we were getting ready to like start, I think, migrating like out of Africa, basically. So people used to argue that this eruption created a bottleneck where it was so devastating to the globe that the human population shrank down to just about 10,000 survivors.
Oh.
So not much. And that like there was this huge reduction in like genetic diversity and that like basically our species almost didn't make it. So this is called the Toba catastrophe theory, and like sounds very scary because it's like, no, it's going to happen again. But recent research has actually contradicted the occurrence of a global volcanic winter and shown that during this time, human populations in India and Africa were actually thriving before and after the eruption. And newer genetic research shows that this bottleneck like may have just been the result of sort of like smaller, less diverse groups migrating into Europe and Asia. So like, you know, a few people go up there and like they're interbreeding a little more. So our gene pool got a little smaller.
Like you're going to have some bottlenecking.
Yeah. So the second one is Taupo, which I think I say Taupo, but like I think the correct pronunciation is more like Topo. And I should got to remember that because I all these years have heard professors say Taupo because it's spelled T-A-U-P-O. But I think it's more like Topo.
Okay.
In New Zealand, had a super volcanic eruption about 26,500 years ago. So again, like people are around, we're doing our thing. So the geologic record doesn't contain really any information on its impact, like specific information on its impact on humanity, but it's obviously big enough that global climate would have been affected. This eruption was larger than Yellowstone's most recent eruption. So, you know, it's a lot coming out. And yeah, like we, as a species, we made it, right? Like we're here now.
True.
Talking about this.
Yeah. And we didn't even have like internet then. So
yeah, like not, like people were like still doing the whole temporary like hunter-gatherer traveling around thing. So
We have Doritos now. We'll be fine.
Yeah, which I know sounds a little bit like, well, some of us will survive, but it's like, and I know that's still a little bit depressing, but it's like, it, a lot of people talk about it like, oh, it's the apocalypse. Like, it's the end of the world. It's the end of people. And that's not true. Like, right. It would be a big deal. I am not going to, like, sugarcoat and say, like, nobody's going to die, because it's like, we have food shortage issues now, like, yeah. And we're not dealing with...
And people still die in volcanic eruptions all the time still, like, so...
Right. Right.
That aren't super volcanoes. Like, people die in volcanoes.
Yeah, like, it's going to be a big deal, but, like, the past record has shown, like, as a species... we are pretty adaptable. Mm-hmm. And I like to be like optimistic and say like, I think we would figure it out. Like, I think it'd be like one of those moments, like we got to come together and like get our shit together and do what needs to be done. The last couple of years have like wavered my belief in that a little bit, but but overall.
One sense of comfort I get is that even if society and civilization as we know it crumbles because of a volcanic eruption that like annihilates human populations across the planet, nobody's ever gonna think about that weird thing I said at a party ever again.
Everybody's gonna have bigger problems, right? To worry about.
Like, whatever stupid bullshit you're worried about on a day-to-day basis right now won't matter.
Won't matter.
Maybe embrace the volcano.
That's what I'm saying.
Let it let the lava flows wash away your sins and be redeemed.
Just let it rip. It's fine.
Be redeemed in the light of the volcano.
So I know that's maybe not as comforting to like from all the like terrifying facts about how many they are and how big they are, but the other thing is like there's an entire section of like the USGS volcanology program that is like at Yellowstone and dedicated to monitoring it. So the Yellowstone Volcano Observatory exists. So it's like people are always keeping an eye on this thing. Like we would know.
It's not like nobody's checking.
Yeah, like we're not going to be like surprised that this is happening. Like we will know that like we're building up to a big eruption and like there will be time to make some plans. And like that's the other thing is like there's so much sensational stuff out there. Like it's maybe like once a year, maybe twice a year, I think like the news cycle gets a little slow and they're just like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to write some articles about like, did you know there's a giant volcano and like it's going to kill all of us?
They're like, when was the last time we did a volcano apocalypse story? It's been a few months, yeah. Right? Slap another one of those on there. Where are we at on the volcanic apocalypse? There's a progress on that coming.
We need to remind people of their impending doom, like, again.
I need that volcanic apocalypse on my desk by 5 p.m.
Yeah, so, like, the news cycle, like, likes to drag it out repeatedly, like, especially if there have been, like, some swarms of earthquakes and stuff that have been happening. Because all that stuff is public knowledge, because the Yellowstone Volcano Observatory is a federal thing. So it's like, you can look at, you know, all the data from there all the time.
You can. I personally would get nothing from looking at that data, right? Because, like, that means nothing to me.
Yeah. But, like, you can look at, like, the earthquake map for, like, the region and, like, see the little dots of, like, where they're happening. And I think that scares some people because they think, like, oh, like earthquakes mean like magma's moving around and like things are moving to the surface or whatever. And it's like, no, it's just like, it is what it is. Like literally every volcano, like there are little earthquakes happening all the time. Things are moving beneath the surface. Like, I think it would be more concerning if like everything all of a sudden got really still. Cause it's like, what is not moving that should be?
Oh, because then it feels like when your toddler is being a little too quiet.
Yeah. Yeah, like what is about to happen that I don't want to know about?
like when a cat is about to pounce and they get that mm-hmm. really, really still. And you're like, mm-hmm. what are you building up to? What are you planning? What are you doing in there?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, constant movement beneath the surface is normal. There are, like, characteristic patterns of earthquakes that happen that can be used to predict, like, impending eruptions. So, yeah. So I guess my whole take home with that is, like, just if you see something that seems like a really sensational news story and it feels really scary, just go to the Yellowstone Volcano Observatory's website and see what they have to say, because that's where you're going to get reasonable information that is accurate.
Yeah, and people whose job it is to like keep an eye on things and say what's going on without the added pressure of like needing to earn a certain number of clicks per day, mm-hmm. right? Like people whose job it is just to put it out there and not to like yeah. entice viewers or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, to just be like, yeah, like they're just like public servants. Like it's just their job to like look at the data and like say it how it is.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of restrictions about like, you know, like they can't run around and be like, we're gonna die. It's all terrible. It's like, no, there'd be a lot of checks and balances on like what gets said and how it gets interpreted and all this stuff. So yeah. And I know some people will take that and they'll be like, oh, the government's not gonna tell you.
Oh, geez.
If we're all gonna die, like they're just gonna cover it up. And it's like, well, whatever. Those are the people who are gonna like hear this and be like, ah, it's a conspiracy. Like I'm just gonna stick around in Wyoming and like that'll be the end of that. So I get very sensitive about it because it's like there have been like viral videos on TikTok recently and viral videos on Facebook of like people like making fake bullshit about like living near Yellowstone and having like weird volcanic gases like coming up on their property or like so like Yellowstone is being evacuated and like things are happening there. And it's like, what? They're not. Like, this is just bullshit.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, the YouTube video that I'm referencing, like, just has, I mean, it has like millions of views. Like, it's just absurd. I'm used to seeing a lot of bullshit about it because it's like, there's just so much fear mongering. And like, you're right. Like, so much of it is directed at Yellowstone.
Like, we all know about Yellowstone, right? So maybe it's just easy to have, like, you've heard of this, right? It could kill you. It reminds me a lot of those, like, you know, late night news segments that are like, these six ingredients you probably have in your pantry are gonna kill your whole family.
Yeah, it's got to be like a cultural bias thing or like sort of a uniquely American thing, because it's like, it's funny because like campy Flagry or the Flagrian Fields, Flagrian Fields, I think, that are like basically on the other side of Naples or like sort of southwest of Naples, whereas Vesuvius is like a little bit southeast. Like, it's a super volcano. It's like sitting there outside of Naples. I'm like, nobody ever talks about that. Yeah, there's the big one that was the most recent that's in New Zealand, but it's like, well, New Zealand's sort of like way across the world and like not that many people live there. So it's like, I don't think that gets a lot of attention or like people don't put together. Like, we're not just talking about like New Zealand being affected. We're talking about everywhere being affected. Like the other big contender is probably like Indonesia has really big volcanoes. Mm-hmm. So.
And Indonesia is also very densely populated. I feel like I hear a lot about like natural disasters that occur that affect Indonesia typically affect a lot of people at once because of how densely populated it is.
Yeah, I know it's written down about like Tambora and Krakatoa, which are like both in Indonesia and like are both like VEI-7. So like not super volcanoes, but like one order of magnitude down, but like had enormous impacts on the local area, but like, and killed, I think Tambora, the estimates are, oh, more than 70,000 people.
Oh my God.
Because like there you're getting really large tsunamis associated with it. Krakatoa also produced really large tsunamis and like I think is tens of thousands, if not over 100,000 deaths as well. So, and those are about like Crater Lake size eruptions. Like they're sort of in the same ballpark. But like those are also ones that have happened historically. Like we have, you know, observations from like people in the last couple hundred years that witnessed them. And like they had global effects, like not as big as a super volcano, but like we're talking about like Tambora, you get the year without a summer, where like in 1816, it was like really cold and rainy across Europe. In North America, you had crop failure and death of livestock and famine. In New England, you get like heavy snowfall in June and still freezing temperatures in July. And like this is from something an order of magnitude smaller. So this isn't making anybody feel better because these like happen more often, but
This is life on Earth, right? You get
this is life on Earth.
You get some highs and lows.
Yeah.
If you want to reap the benefits,
yeah,
you got to take an L every once in a while.
Yeah, I like the volcano giveth and volcano taketh away. Because it is true, like, volcanic soil is really rich, like, it's a great place to live, like.
It's luring you in, like, hey.
Yeah, it's really nice here, but then.
Come put all your farms and villages in this nice fertile soil I've got here.
Surprise!
Something we talked about in our Pompeii episode was how, like, I totally get how so many religions and cultures have some sort of reverence for like volcanoes as like association with deities or like religious significance. Because I was like, if you've got a pantheon of gods ranging from like all the different things you encounter in your life, the one you really want a good positive relationship with is the volcano god, because that's the one that's gonna yeah. be that kind of has an axe over your head, right?
That's the one that we like sacrifice the virgins to or whatever.
Like, here, whatever you need, homie.
You just take it. Yeah, that's like a thing that I really love about volcanoes is like, I'm not a religious person, but like, but I get it, like why there's so much folklore and yeah, just like so many deities and gods and stuff that live in volcanoes or like they are the volcano, whatever it is, because it's like I said, like it's just even small volcanoes, you know, in the scheme of things, like Vesuvius, Mount St. Helens, like it's just an enormous amount of power. And like I can imagine that for people who witnessed these really big eruptions, like Crater Lake, for example, there were indigenous tribes that lived in the region and they have really cool folklore about the eruption. And like it's cool to read it because it's more of like a history of what happened. Like it's not just stories, like they saw it happen. And I'm sure like it felt like the end of the world to them. Like it would have been dark for days and like just I can't even imagine like seeing a mile of mountain that used to be there just like disappear. So I get it why it's like a religious experience.
You're asking your buds around you like that mountain was bigger before, right? Like am I imagining things, or did it used to be yeah. more up?
Yeah, yeah, they have like stories about like the caldera itself like being cursed and like you're not supposed to like look upon it and stuff. So I was like, I get it. If I was around and saw that happen, like no fucking thank you.
No, I will actually not be partaking in any of that. Thank you.
I will
very
not
much.
Go up there. Like I don't want to make anybody angry associated with this.
I am choosing not to perceive the volcano.
Yeah. And I get that.
I'm opting out of the volcano.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's totally valid, like, because they have these oral histories that got passed down about it. So, yeah.
For sure. Because I feel like now when people are kind of being given more information and, like, it's fueling more anxiety about volcanoes, mm-hmm. you know, like, we're doing the same thing still, right? Oh,
yeah. It's, like, less of, like, a religious experience and more of, like, a, I don't know, conspiracy theory. kind of thing, or like the yeah, I've seen a lot of stuff about various eruptions that have happened, and people are like, oh, the whole Ring of Fire is gonna erupt, or Yellowstone's gonna erupt now, and it's like, that is not how volcanoes work,
as orchestrated by the lizard people, clearly.
Yeah, it's like something like that, or the government is involved. I don't know.
have you seen that meme that's from that animated series Invincible? The guy is, he's a superhero. He's voiced by J.K. Simmons. And
oh, okay. I didn't realize he was in that.
He was in that. He was the voice of like the dad superhero guy.
Okay.
And he's talking to his son and he's pointing at the fighter jet flying behind him. And he's like, look at what they need to mimic a fraction of our power. That's the volcanoes looking at humans like with their nuclear bombs and atomic missiles and stuff. Look what they need yeah. to mimic a fraction of our power.
Yeah. Well, fun fact for you. The Krakatoa eruption was, if you want to put it in terms of like nuclear bombs. So it had its big eruption in 1883, and the energy released by it was equivalent to 200 megatons of TNT, or about 10,000 little boy atomic bombs exploding simultaneously.
Oh, that's a little...
Yeah. And that's like a big eruption, but like not very big. So it's
not the
it's,
biggest.
Yeah. It's like, it's insane. Like, it hurts my brain to think about just how much raw power that is.
If anything, that makes me feel a little less anxious about atomic bombs.
Not where we expect it to end up.
It turns out the order of things I'm worried about has just shifted around a little bit. That's all.
Yeah, the answer is always like nature is the scariest thing. People want to tell a lot of monster stories. They want to talk about, like, you know, what people can do with each other. And it's like,
because it's like all the bullshit you've been fucking around with your whole life could be just laid flat instantly. Mother Nature doesn't give a shit about your taxes. What do you have going on? Small business? Fuck your small business. Volcanic eruption.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just think they're really cool. It makes me... So I got my PhD in volcanology, like worked as a professor for a couple years, worked in a managing a lab at a university. And now I'm more like, oddly enough, like still doing isotope chemistry and like similar technical work, but I'm more in like the public health field. So I do something different now, but it's like it's nice to come back to my science roots.
And when you're not doing all of this cool, amazing stuff, you're also communicating science.
Yeah, yeah.
Of the spooky variety on your podcast. Tell us about that.
Sure. Because for a long time, I thought, you know, that I wanted to do the whole professor thing and then realized, like, no, academia is kind of a nightmare. Like, that's not what I want to do forever.
Fair. So fair.
Yeah. So I've ended up a little bit further away, like more like technical lab work, which I still love and is great. But yeah, during the early pandemic days, my sister-in-law and I started Spooky Science Sisters. Which is a podcast. I guess we just say it's the science behind the strange and unusual. So probably a lot of topics that we talk about are, some of the stuff we talk about is like similar to what you guys have talked about. Like, we've done a spooky volcanoes episode and like a couple other things that are like a little more, I don't know, real life. But we also do like science behind, like, I don't know, why people see ghosts, or like debunking various cryptids like Bigfoot and stuff like that. So just like weird things, and like what would cause people to tell these stories, or like why might they be seeing these types of monsters, things like that, from like a scientific perspective.
Yeah.
So between that and making TikTok videos and I don't know, all the other little things that I've gotten to do, doing stuff like this, like guest appearances, it's like I'm still able to get that, scratch that itch of like getting to communicate about science with people, but like in a way that I think is important these days, like on a more like, this is super fun and interesting, and like we don't have to take a bunch of science classes or whatever. We can just like chat about this in like a fun, giggly way.
So. Right. There are so many barriers to learning about the things going on around you. And so any sort of science communication that's like in a very sort of casual, accessible setting, especially when it's coming from somebody who, you know, has the education, has the background, and, you know, is able to explain things accurately and without sensationalizing it, right? And
yeah,
being like, okay, here's what's actually going on. It's very needed, yeah, in a world of,
yeah,
paywalls everywhere.
Yeah, paywalls, the actual science that gets published and stuff. Yeah, the public is very cut off from that, because like, yeah, the journal industry is like a whole other thing. But yeah, there's also just been this idea of sort of like scientists are sort of like, or academics are like off in their ivory tower, and they're like very separate and like very intellectual, and like they want nothing to do with the general public. It's want to be off in their labs. And it's like, no, it's important for you guys to like understand science and appreciate it and like think that it's cool, because otherwise like weird stuff starts to happen.
If you thought volcanoes were scary, wait until you hear about academic publishing.
Yeah. But yeah, I just think that, yeah, there's been like a disconnect or a wall between scientists and the public, and of my own volition, I've just decided I'm just going to do it.
Yeah, just get out there.
Yeah.
So if people listening do want to, you know, learn more about your spooky science and follow along with your TikToks and fill their For You page with good, accurate
weird shit.
Weird shit without like the bullshit.
Yeah.
Where can folks follow along with your work on like social media? Where can the podcast be found? All the good stuff.
Yes. So podcast stuff and like links to, I don't know, all the various platforms. Like we're on, you know, all the major podcast platforms for the most part. So you can search for Spooky Science Sisters there. You can also go to SpookyScienceSisters.com, and that will have links that you can find us on social media. We're on all the usual ones. Username on Twitter and Instagram is SpookyScipod, so SCIPOD. And on TikTok, I'm just Spooky Science. And why I made that one different, I don't know. But I did.
That's a good handle, though.
I know. I was sort of shocked that it was available. So I was like, maybe that's why I did it, thinking back.
It's catchy. Like,
I'm taking this one.
Yeah, that's a good handle to have.
Yes. So we're on Spooky Science there. I think that's all the major things.
I'll also have links to everything in the episode description so people listening can scroll down and click through and fill your life with fill your life with anxiety and dread about the world around you, I guess.
I know. We the beginning of every one of our episodes, we say like, hey, like join us for a science-based but like probably very giggly discussion on things that are strange and unusual in our world. And that can be like the supernatural to just like just weird shit in general that like happens. And we do crack a lot of jokes and we are very giggly, and you've probably heard me giggle a lot during this time because that's how I deal with social anxiety. But there are many episodes where we get to the end and we're like, that was a lot.
Like, this sucks.
That was a lot more depressing than I thought it was going to be. Or like we accidentally end on like a really like bummer of a note. It's like, okay, have a great time, guys. Bye.
I've decimated the vibes. Goodbye.
Unfortunately, we do that a lot. Like I did in the middle of this, when you're like, I thought this was gonna make me feel better. It's like, no, it's gonna get a lot worse.
It was a journey.
It's gonna get better.
It was a journey. It's okay. It's an emotional roller coaster. But I feel like demystifying it. Like for me, like I feel like when I have a lot of anxiety and dread about something, it's usually because I don't understand it, you know?
Yeah.
And like demystifying it, breaking it down, understanding it a lot better helps. It's like with Just the Zoo of Us, we talk a lot about like breaking down phobias, especially like, you know, animal-based phobias are some of the most common ones. So like fear of like spiders, snakes, stuff like that. And so, you know, I've experienced that a lot in my own life, like learning a lot more about the things you're afraid of can help.
Yeah.
It can ease a lot of that anxiety and dread. So, I mean, that's what I think it is.
Well, someday I'll have to have you tell me why I'm like irrationally afraid of crickets.
Crickets? I don't know. I've never heard that one.
Crickets and like grasshoppers like are just nightmare fuel.
I can kind of see grasshoppers. They're kind of dicks.
They just like, I don't know.
Okay.
It's not like, yeah. Anyway. Anyway, that's a tangent. But like, yeah, we had like a jet. We got a lot of crickets coming into our back door of like our old house. And then we had like a finished basement area. And like every once in a while, you just see like a big old cricket like going across the floor. And I was like, I'm going to burn this house down. Like I don't want to see a cricket.
That's your little, if you made it this far, here's your little bonus fun fact here at the end is Megan's terrified of crickets.
Megan thinks crickets are the worst, even though I know they are harmless and like.
Fair.
Nothing to be afraid of. They just really creep me out.
Rancid vibes. just atrocious energy. All right, Megan, I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. I'll be back in 2 weeks with my co-host Ashley with an episode about the sex cult behind mankind's journey to space. Follow us on social media to keep up with the show as it grows, or let us know what you thought and leave a good review if you liked what you heard. Our theme music is Snake Oil by Doug Organ. If you've made it this far, here's a palate cleanser. Astronauts aboard the International Space Station have planted and grown flowers, including sunflowers and orange zinnias, while in space. Until next time, this has been Spellbound and Gagged.